Thanks. And thank you very much for inviting me to speak. I always love coming to Toronto and to Fields in particular. And yeah, I think that though I won't be using the terms infinity category or derived anything anywhere, just imagine that I'm saying these words sufficiently often that I have the same rate as in the other talks. Everything I described today is a joint with Mike Hopkins. And Doug Ravenow. And I'm happy to say that I think most of the people here have seen at least one of us or some combination of us speak about some of this circle of ideas. So today's talk is not going to focus on any of the history of the problem. It's not even going to really focus on anything beyond the statement of the problem. Instead, I'm going to talk about some of the computational aspects, as the title implies, and then something that we never really get a chance to talk about, some of the ways to show the periodicity results that we also do. However, I would be deeply remiss if I didn't state a theorem. And that is that there are Curvair invariants, one manifold only in dimensions 2, 6, 14, 30, 62, and I'll put in brackets 126, because this is yet unresolved. As I said, I'm not going to say anything about this. I'm not going to define any of these terms. I'm going to just assure you that these numbers are still numbers, and it's not that this number has any special meaning compared to what you would expect. So what is, light lift indeed. So what's the method? Well, there's sort of a few circles of ideas, and I'm going to draw a picture similar to what Andre did, just because I thought it was kind of pretty, and that we prove a few ancillary results. First, in a family of equivariant localizations, of MU, or really someone that will sort of for now be lurking in the shadows, MU G, the minus second homotopy group of the G fixed points of this, or of any of these localizations, is always zero. So I'll say exactly what kinds of localizations I'm looking at. It's not just localizations in the end. I can also kill off things that you would think of as regular sequences and then localize, sort of all the sorts of tricks that I've used to build ring spectra out of other ring spectra. If I choose them right, and I'm starting with something nice like this, this is automatic. In fact, I'm going to prove this result in the course of the talk. On the other hand, there's sort of a second related family, different family, but, well, different implies non-overlapping. So in a, let's say, somewhat related family, of localizations, the homotopy groups are periodic. This is then, again, pi star of the fixed points. So it sounds like this is actually a vacuous statement. I'm saying that if I localize, then I get something periodic. Well, we always expect that if you localize, you get something periodic. The important thing here is that the localizations are also equivariant ones. So I'm not localizing with respect to elements in trivial stems, in ones that are indexed by the integers, which would guarantee that the integer-graded homotopy groups are periodic. I'm localizing with respect to things in stems given by non-trivial representations, which means that if I look at all of the representation ring graded homotopy groups, those are periodic automatically from this localization. But I can't say that if I pull out a distinguished slice, namely those indexed by trivial representations, that those are a priori also periodic. Notice there's also something slightly deceptive here. This is actually easily proved a statement about the fixed points, and that's what we're going to do. This one is more a statement about homotopy fixed points, and there it's easy to show this one. So I should tether these, and that is that when the families are the same, so in the overlap between these, then I can say more, and that is that the fixed points of the overlap localizations are the homotopy fixed points. And then if I were to continue on below where you'd see, I would tie it back to this, because I'd say that there are easy-to-describe spectra that fall into this category that also faithfully detect the Kerver classes in their Haurevitch image. And then we just piece this together. We see that the homotopy groups are periodic, and we compute that the period's 256. We see that pi minus 2 is 0, and we see that the classes that I would care about are faithfully detected when they exist. So I can't faithfully detect a non-zero class in the zero group. And I get the results. I want, since I'm thinking about just the equivariant computations, to focus on these, because there's a single tool that you use to approach both of these. And that's the following. The theorem, there's an equivariant analog of the Posnikov filtration that lets us compute easily the homotopy groups of an equivariant spectrum. So I can compute pi star of, say, the fixed points of of any equivariant spectrum, but the ones I'll care about are these localizations. So I should be careful here. There is an immediate equivariant analog of the Posnikov filtration, namely the Posnikov filtration done equivariantly. And there, that's also a filtration that lets you compute the homotopy groups. The starting data there is the homotopy groups. So this is a filtration that gives you this, because that's actually the E1 term of the spectral sequence, and it collapses. Not as useful if we don't already know this. What we start with instead is a filtration that for things like MU, or for these localizations thereof, the associated graded is nice, but it's not exactly the homotopy. It's something that is still readily computable. And this is the slice filtration. So there are several antecedents. If I look at the single group of order 2, then it was done by Duggar, and he uses this to show how to compute with a T is real K theory in a nice, easy way. There's also a motivic analog, which is also called the slice filtration. In fact, the motivic one is what led us to call this the slice filtration. And you build them in similar ways. You're always sort of considering some class of spheres, and you're nullifying all of the maps out of them. The motivic one is slightly different in that there are different maps between, say, GM and the Eilenberg-MacLane spectra than there are between representation spheres and the Eilenberg-MacLane spectra. So before I continue, I have to introduce another character, and that's what is MUG. So I'll just talk about MU4, as we call it other times, and I'll also call this MU sub C4. And this is just going to be the fourfold MU C8. This is the fourfold smash product of mu, and I give it the permutation action. Well, I haven't been entirely honest here. Here I'm seeing a CH, and with the permutation action, visibly, this is just going to be C4. I use the fact that mu itself comes equipped with an action of the cyclic group of order 2, namely by complex conjugation. So I come all the way around, and then when I reach the last factor, I head back via the complex conjugation on mu. And then you can imagine if I had a bigger group here that contained C2, I'd take a smash product of the index of C2 in the bigger group factors, I'd use the permutation action, and then again, once I reach the end, I come back around. So you can see how to build all of them. So there's a few things that I need. I need that this is a genuine C8 spectrum. So I'll push off to say that a number of people have talked about sort of what exactly this sort of means, and that V talked about it when he was talking about THH as a genuine S1 equivariant spectrum. I have lots of flavors of fixed points. I have actual fixed points, which are the things that show up when I care about homotopy groups and are also almost uncomputable. And then I have the other notion, the easier notion, of geometric fixed points. And those will show up here too. And that is the geometric fixed points for C8. So this is my notion for the geometric fixed point functor of MU4, which I guess in V's notation would be MU4 and then GC8. This is a very familiar spectrum. It's MO, another TOM spectrum. In fact, everything on this board is a TOM spectrum, but here I'm saying that when I take the fixed points of the C8 action, I'm looking at sort of a diagonal copy of MU that would fit inside here, and I'm taking the fixed points of the complex conjugation. Well, if I do fixed points of complex conjugation, I'm pulling out the real part. So I'm saying instead of using unitary matrices, I use orthogonal matrices. This fact is essential in this. We know everything there is to know about this guy. And we know everything that we would want to know about, say, maps, distinguished maps from MU into this. We know the homotopy from TOM. We know how exactly what formal group law this carries, everything we'd like to know. That fact gives us this. And that's one of the things that I want to talk about that we haven't stressed a lot in many of the earlier talks. Of course, you probably guessed there's a whole story here that I'm sweeping under the rug. And so this is all part of the story that we call the norm, which you could also call the topological Evans transfer. And this is a multiplicative functor that's going to take H equivariant spectra to G equivariant spectra, and it plays nicely with E infinity things, and it has this sort of property on geometric fixed points, that the norm commutes with geometric fixed points in the expected way. I don't want to say too much about it, except for the fact that on homotopy groups, we end up getting a function that looks like the norm. And that would say if I have a C2 equivariant element, so this is going to be something in, say, pi star C2 of some C2 equivariant spectrum, then I get a norm which looks like the product over the coset. So I'd have x times gx times, and so on, g to the whatever, x, which is, all right, the norm of x. And this is in the homotopy groups for g of the norm of x. In other words, I'll be able to lift homotopy classes here multiplicatively. This is not an additive homomorphism. If you look at what does it do to, say, 2, well, you can see it's going to multiply over the conjugates there, and I'm getting something that's not 2. if I was slightly more careful with this, then I could do this not just in the integer graded homotopy, but in any of the ROG graded homotopy. And there, this lands starts not from the same sphere, but rather from an induced sphere. And I'll spell that out more in a little bit. Well, I've claimed that we have this equivariant filtration of any equivariant spectrum, and now I claim that for MU, we can use it. So the slice associated graded for MU, I'll just say G, but again, I only want to think of, say, cyclic two groups, is the following. It's a big wedge, and it's indexed by monomials in the homotopy groups, the underlying homotopy groups of MU. But really, I only care about the mod 2. And then it's things that are essentially representation spheres. So I'm going to induce up from some subgroup that depends on my monomial to my group. Then I'm going to take the regular representation sphere, and I want that the underlying dimension is that of P. So it'll be the degree of P over the degree of the subgroup times the regular representation for the subgroup. And of course, this is the real regular representation, smashed with HZ. Okay, so I need to spell out some things. I need to say how exactly you get HP and why you might expect this, but let's just think non-equivariantly and see what is this saying. This is saying if I work non-equivariantly, that there's a filtration of MU or of the smash powers of MU, such the associated graded is a wedge of Eilenberg-MacLane spectra, integral Eilenberg-MacLane spectra, indexed by the homotopy groups of MU. This is something we all know and love. In fact, if I think of MU and I just look at the associated graded by powers of the augmentation ideal from MU mapping to HZ, this is exactly the associated graded you get. Now, there's something subtle here. Really, I'm not just using the monomials. I'm looking at orbits of the monomials under the group action. And so that's what this term is telling me. That if I look at a monomial, this is in the underlying homotopy. So since this is an equivariant spectrum, I can always compose with the group action, and that acts then on the underlying homotopy. So the monomials here, since I'm thinking equivariantly, don't stand on their own. They stand in families given by the group action. So I have its stabilizer, which does stand on its own, and then otherwise I go through all of the translates. So I'm looking at the stabilizer of my monomial P, and then the induced part here is just taking take the wedge of all of the translates under the cosets of my element given by this homotopy class. So that's all. HP is the stabilizer of P. And again, I'm working mod 2 just to avoid sign issues. No, I have a sum end for each orbit. Yes, for each orbit of elements. Yes. This one is actually indexed by integers. So the equivariant part shows up in two places. It's the fact that I'm doing a representation sphere. And then also, and I don't want to try and move the board again, there's a little line that should be under that Z. This is actually the Eilenberg-MacLane spectrum associated to the constant Mackey functor Z, which showed up in Clark's talk. Though in a much more elementary way here. what I claim, though, is that this is actually really computable. What does smashing with HZ do when I take homotopy? It says, compute the homology groups. So I'm asking, in this filtration, how do I compute the homology groups of representation spheres? What's the induction do? Well, that says, if I'm looking at, say, G fixed points, it says, forget that we're doing G equivariant things, and just pretend we're doing H equivariant things. So at the end of the day, all I have to understand how to compute the E2 term of this spectral sequence, is how to compute the homology groups of various representation spheres. And then again, I'm using coefficients in the Kostomaki functor Z. These are the only things that I'm using in this picture. In general, this is bad. If I'm doing an arbitrary group, even with the Kostomaki functor Z, and I'm trying to grade over the entire representation ring, it's very hard to compute this. This is the coefficients of equivariant homology theory. But what I'm going to show you is that in this case, when I'm doing cyclic groups, and when I care predominantly about these kinds of representations, it's really easy. I'm going to show you chain complexes, which you compute this sort of thing for any representation or virtual representation, and assuming we're dealing with cyclic groups. But now I can start getting to the meat of the matter. And the first is an observation. And that is that if I take a representation sphere for a bigger group, so K, rho, G, and I smash this with one of these induced representation spheres. Oops, that's L, rho, H. Then this is, again, an induced representation sphere. And it's, again, a representation of the same form. So this is going to be L plus K times the order of G over the order of H. Rho H. I'm not saying much here. I'm saying that if I have the regular representation for G and I restrict it to H, then that splits into a sum of copies of the regular representation of H, and I know exactly how many factors there are. And I think this is called something like Frobenius reciprocity, or if you like, this is a defining property when you have a Mackey functor for expressing how the multiplication and the transfer interact. That the restriction, and that everything's a module over the restriction maps, and then the transfer is a module map for those. So what's this tell me? It tells me that if I look at the slice associated graded, or that I have a filtration of such that this is true, the associated graded of any suspension of MUG by regular representations has the same form. The numbers that are showing up in the exponents are going to change, obviously, to reflect the fact that I've suspended. But otherwise, the form of this, the fact that it's induced spheres, induced regular representation spheres, smash HZ, doesn't change at all. The exponent is the degree of P, which is just a monomial, divided by the order of H times the regular representation for H. So in other words, the underlying sphere is the degree P sphere, and then I've just broken it into a sum of however appropriately many copies of H P there are. It's just something that sort of, as you write down what the stabilizer ends up being, you see that the degrees of P are always divisible by the order of their stabilizer. Would it help if I gave you another presentation of this so that it will maybe make it easier? So this ring, the ring, so not the mod G part, I can write as D mod 2, adjoin a class R1, the translate of that under the group and so on. And again, I'm doing a cyclic 2 group up to 2 to the n minus 1 minus 1 on R1. Then I start with R2, and so on. And the group acts by sending, in the obvious way, it sends R1 to gamma R1, and then when I reach the end, it comes back around to minus 1 to the degree over 2 of R1. From that, then the fact that you always have this being an integer is actually easier to see. Okay. So now I'll prove something. I'll call this, let's say, Gaap Theorem 1. And that is that pi minus 2 g of any of these representation spheres, so I'll just look at S, K, G, smash, H, oops, K, rho G, smash, H, Z, is 0 for all non-trivial G, and all K. So I'm making a statement simply about how to actually compute a particular homology group. Now, there's a couple of things. First off, if K is at least 0, this is obvious. This is because I'm looking at an actual sphere, and I'm saying that actual spheres don't have minus second homology groups. We know this, that it's going to be bounded below by 0. What is more interesting is then when K is negative, so when K is negative, I should think that I'm computing the cohomology of these representation spheres. And that will require us to have a little chain complex. So now I'll have a somewhat brief aside, and that's how to compute this. So what do I need? I've already said that I'm computing the equivariant homology of these representation spheres. Equivariant homology is telling me exactly how do I attach cells, but now in an equivariant way. So if I produce for you an equivariant cell decomposition, then I can just do the ordinary thing. I have the cellular chains, I multiply that by my coefficients, and then I do things like take fixed points, if I want to take fixed points, and take homology, and I'm done. What I'll do is I'll describe for you a way to do this. And the idea is, if I'm looking at K times the regular representation, and I'll still do C2 to the n, then this splits up. I have K trivial factors. I have K copies of the sign representation. And then I start in on the two-dimensional representations. So I've got the one that's just C2 to the n is the 2 to the nth roots of unity, sitting inside S1. S1 acts on C. That's a two-dimensional representation. And then I can twist that by composing with the multiplication map on S1 and get new homomorphisms. So there's a bunch of two-dimensional ones. But what I can always do is I can always order them by the size of the stabilizer subgroup of a point. Everything in the group stabilizes this one. Everything in the index 2 subgroup stabilizes this one, because this is just flipping. The generator's doing the flipping. In the next one, if I sort of do the rotation that's actually send a generator to multiplication by I, then this is going to be stabilized by the index 4 subgroup. If I multiply by an 8th root of unity, that's going to be stabilized by the index 8 subgroup. And I can work my way down. So what this tells me is I can build this representation sphere as a union of an increasing union of smaller representation spheres. I can start with the K-sphere. And I know then how to build this as a cellular guy. I have a single cell in dimension K and it's fixed. Then I can start to build sine representation spheres. And this sits inside here. This one sits inside the next. And when I think of how do I build a sine sphere, well, I can just look at what's happening in a single case. I have the real line, and I've got the origin and the point at infinity. And then I've got, Andre, I am not. And then I have two 1 cells that are being flipped. This is a positive real axis and then negative real axis. So every time I add in a sine representation, I'm just adding two more cells that I'm then flipping. So I have a z squared with a permutation action, z squared with a permutation action, and so on. At some point I exhaust, once I reach 2k, I exhaust my sine representations. I have to ask, how do I add in then the next representation? Well, if I think about the next one I said was multiplication by I, so I would put in, I'll just draw it. I have the origin. I have the coordinate semi-axes. And these would be my 1 cells. And then I have the two, the quadrants. And those are my 2 cells. That's the pattern that I would repeat all the way up. So once I reach 2k plus 1, I'm going to put in 4 new cells, and so on. The whole thing is a complex with non-zero elements in k times the order of g dimensions. And it starts with something k-dimensional, and it ends with something in this top dimension. What am I still missing? I haven't told you a single map. And were I to be slightly more glib, I would say that it doesn't matter. As it is, I'll say it almost doesn't matter. The maps are determined by exactly this part of the data. I want to ensure that at each stage, once I've gone up, that I have something that's whose underlying homology is that of a sphere of the appropriate dimension, and such that all the maps are equivariant. So if I start down here at this stage, I want to make sure that I have something whose homology is that of the k plus 1 sphere. So the only way I can do that is if both of these maps, the one from each of the factors, is onto. And it's equivariant, so really I only have to specify what it does to one of the factors, and then the equivariant action gives me the rest. And I just march my way all the way up. This part here, though, is important. It's always the same for all of these complexes. I'm starting with the trivial sphere, and I'm adding in a single copy of the sine representation. And I already said that to ensure that the underlying thing for this part is just the underlying thing for that k plus sigma sphere, so just the k plus 1 sphere, I need to make sure that this map is the fold map, the one that sends z squared onto z. That tells me what this one's going to be. If, you know, k is at least 2, it's going to be 1 minus the generator, 1 plus the generator, and so on. So you start to see things that look like I'm building the resolution of the group, but then my group is jumping in size. Okay. So we have a filtration of mu, so it's associated is this, and I'm saying that using these complexes, you're able to compute any of the terms that show up there. Because the kth homotopy group, so pi k, the only letter I seem to use, pi l of s k rho g smash h z, this is just the lth homology group of this chain complex. But I'm working equivariantly, so I should really ask for the equivariant homotopy classes of maps, and there I just take the fixed points of my chain complex. Underlying homotopy is going to be boring. The underlying thing is just a sphere, so the homology is just the homology groups of the sphere. Once they take fixed points, things behave really differently. And it's no longer the case that the underlying thing is just that of a sphere. So in a minute, I'll talk about how to name all of the elements in here. But for now, I want to finish proving this, which I started to do. So with this chain complex, well, I should say, what do I do if k is negative? And if k is negative, I say equivariant Spanier-Whitehead duality. That's how actually I'm going to define my minus k rho g spheres. And then what does that do to my complex? I just hom this into z, just like ordinary Spanier-Whitehead duality. So I flip all the errors. And otherwise, it looks the same. So in particular, if k is less than negative 2, then co-connectivity shows that pi minus 2 of s k rho g smash h z is 0. And so the only ones that are left are k is minus 2 and minus 1. Well, now I just take this part of the diagram. If I look at k as minus 2 or minus 1, then I'm looking at the dual of the fold map, which is the diagonal map. This is the start of my complex. And if k is minus 1, this is in minus 1, and this is in minus 2. If k is minus 2, this is in minus 2, and this is in minus 3. But now I'll take this recipe. To compute the minus second homotopy group, I'm supposed to take the g fixed points of this and compute the homology. Well, when I take the fixed points of this, this is fixed. So z sits inside here as the fixed points. And then the fixed points here are the diagonal, because I'm swapping the two coordinates for my group action. So this map restricted to the fixed points is the identity. And then I finished. I want to know that pi minus 2 was 0. Pi minus 2 was to compute the homology in that degree. And either it's just the homology of this complex, either starting in this part or this part. No matter what, it's 0. So pi minus 2 is 0. Okay. So now, a corollary is that pi minus 2 of any desuspension of mu by a regular representation sphere is 0. I have sigma k rho g Y. Well, I've already said that there's a filtration of this, such the associated graded breaks up into a wedge of things like this, and I've shown that for every single wedge sum end, pi minus 2 is 0. So I run the associated spectral sequence. And I'm saying that I have the zero group, and they're all supposed to reassemble to give me the zero group. So that's not terrible. We can even do better if you look a little bit more at this complex. You can also say that there's a slightly bigger gap. Pi minus 1 of these are also always 0, and pi minus 3 of these are also always 0, which is kind of surprising. So then, maybe a restatement then of the actual gap theorem. And that is that if delta is a map from a regular representation sphere into MUG, then pi minus 2 of delta inverse MUG is 0. So now I can say what the family of localizations I'm looking at are. It's the localizations where I'm inverting elements that are carried by regular representation spheres. It sounds like there aren't going to be a lot of these if you just look at this. I haven't really described much what sorts of things would show up here. So I'll give two examples. And that is that if I look at, I can look at Atiyah's KR theory. This is a Z-Montour covariance thing. And this receives a good map from MUR, the equivariant Conner-Floyd map. And then if I invert a class that's carried by a regular representation sphere, namely V1, then I kill some stuff, I can produce exactly this. So KR, Atiyah's KR theory, up to killing some stuff, fits into this framework. And I learned that without even knowing anything about KR, that the fixed points of KR, which are actually KO, have pi minus 2 is 0. And pi minus 1 is 0, and pi minus 3 is 0. Well, we know this. We know the homotopy groups of KO. And in fact, we know that those three homotopy groups are 0. A slightly more exotic example, but in a similar vein to this, if I look at TMF with level structure, I can build the spectrum TMF 5. So this is similar to level structure that Gerd talked about yesterday, I guess. And this is going to be the homotopy fixed points of something like this. So I'll just say this fits into this framework. In that this is the fixed points of one of these localizations of MU. And we learn with zero work that pi minus 3, pi minus 2, and pi minus 1 of it are 0. If you've seen the sort of showmanship that maybe used in previous talks, at some point there's a picture that I like to use where you see the homotopy fixed point spectral sequence that converges to this versus the slice spectral sequence that converges to this. In the homotopy fixed point spectral sequence, you see a huge amount of stuff in pi's minus 3, minus 2, and minus 1. Here there's nothing. It's all taken care of by just the existence of the spectral sequence. Yes. So since I've already sort of introduced now the complexes that show up, I want to spend a very small amount of time talking about the spectral sequence associated to the filtration that I just erased. Computing the homology of these complexes tells you how to write down every single thing on the E2 term. On the other hand, there's an awful lot of elements that can be written as monomials in the homotopy groups of a big smash product of copies of MU. So still a lot of stuff. So instead of drawing you any pictures, I'm going to draw you just sort of a generic picture that describes where things lie. So I'm going to consider predominantly positive degrees. And there's a line of slope 1 through the origin, and underneath this, this is the contribution from stuff induced from C2. So the stuff coming from C4, C8, C whatever also has stuff here, but everything coming from C2 lies below this line of slope 1. Then I have a line of slope 3, and everything coming from C4 lies below the line of slope 3. I have a line of slope 7, and everything coming from C8 lies below the line of slope 7, and you can guess the pattern. So in particular, in a case that we actually used to prove the theorem that was up there but was erased, to detect the elements, you only have to go out to C8. And so here, we end up with a much smaller range. If I only care about what's happening in this region here, I can ignore anything coming from C2 and C4. Or put another way, between the lines of slope 3 and 8, there's no contribution from induced cells. So that has different equivariant contents. So between lines of, and I'll just stick to this because otherwise I get too many powers of 2. So slope 3 and 8, there's no contribution from induced cells. In other words, in that wedge where I wrote everything as a wedge of induced from some subgroup, the only ones that show up are when the subgroup is the whole group. So in other words, those that are induced from C8 to C8. So there's only one wedge somewhere in there. Thank you. So there's another thing that destroys any content of induced cells. Geometric fixed points. So the geometric fixed point functor also ignores, in that it destroys, all induced cells. So if I know that the geometric fixed points of MU4, which was my MUCH, are MO, then the only way I can produce the homotopy groups of MO, since I'm doing geometric fixed points, are those parts that don't see any induced cells. Namely, those parts between the lines of slope 3 and 7. So this is governed by the region between those two lines. And of course, everywhere I say 3 and 7, you should think 2 to the n minus 1, minus 1, and 2 to the n, minus 1. So this is a whole lot smaller. Before, I had this big wedge over monomials. Now, the only wedge sum ends that show up are those that have stabilizer group all of C8. And if you think of R1 goes to gamma R1, goes to gamma squared R1, goes to gamma cubed R1, and then comes back up to a sine, the only way I can get that to be fixed is if all of the factors, R1 through gamma cubed R1, show up, and they have the same power showing up. In other words, the sum ends that show up, or the monomials that show up, are really monomials in mod 2 adjoin these norm classes. or again, as I said earlier, and then erased, this is going to be R1 times gamma R1, gamma squared R1, gamma cubed R1, and so on. And this is fixed. I'm just saying something about a permutation action. So this is a much smaller, albeit still infinite, thing on which you're indexing. And we learn that these are the important classes that we actually know live as homotopy classes, because they're norms from things that were underlying homotopy classes. So these are God-given elements that are going to show up in the homotopy in their appropriate equivariant stems. In the 9 or so minutes remaining, I'm going to tell you how to name every element in this, and then I'm going to tell you how to compute the geometric fixed points. And I'll finish by running a spectral sequence, which is going to be very easy and gives us slice differentials out of the homotopy groups of ML. Okay. Well, here are some names. First, I need to name a homotopy class of maps between spheres. So V is a representation. I'm going to let A sub V denote the inclusion of the origin and the point at infinity into the V-sphere. These points are always fixed in any representation. In fact, this isn't even a stable homotopy statement. This is just one where I'm looking at equivariant homotopy classes of maps between spaces. I have my representation, the origin's always fixed, the point at infinity I force to be fixed, and so I can include the two of them as fixed points. In general, those are the only fixed points I'm guaranteed to have. They're always there. And in fact, if V has non-trivial fixed points, then AV is null. Because if I have a non-trivial sub-representation that's fixed, I can just move the point at infinity along that fixed representation down to the origin. That's the only way I can do it. I can only move fixed points through other fixed points. So if V is fixed point free, this is actually a non-trivial element in the homotopy, in the equivariant homotopy groups of spheres. And then I'm also going to denote its Horavitch image by the same name. So the next step is if V is orientable, and that means exactly what you think, that it's just a representation of the orthogonal group, it's going into SO, then we have a distinguished map from S of the dimension of V to S V / H V. That's an orientation class. I'll call this U sub V. And if you like, and I would recommend, you take some of the representation sphere chain complexes that I described. You can see which ones are orientable. They're the ones that have an even number of copies of the sign representation. And then check that the top homology group is Z. And the generator, as you sort of go in via the diagonal that shows up, is exactly this orientation class. So what I claim is that this gives me names for all elements in the homology of my representation spheres. I'll do it like this. If I have a representation sphere, say S V plus W, and I have its little chain complex, and I'm looking in some dimension, well, what I do is I find the representation sphere that I've built by going up until I reach that dimension. So if you remember, as I was drawing the chain complex, I think it was even on this board, I was putting the groups and an increasing sequence of representations that carved out the group at the same time. So just play that exact same game. So I reach some representation here, say SV. and I look at its chain complex, and from the way this is constructed, the inclusion of SV into SW plus V induces an isomorphism of complexes in this range. So this part here is an isomorphism. I'm looking in this degree, so I just pull back here, let them look at the top class. Well, the top class here I've defined to be generated by UV. The generator here is UV. And then all I have to do is say, how do I get from a class in here to a class in here? Well, that's taking UV and multiplying by the inclusion of SV into SV plus W, which is just the SV-fold suspension of the inclusion of S0 into SW. So this map is AW. This map is the homology version of AW. And I learned that if this class here was UV, then the class that's generating here is going to be AW times UV. So I could go all the way down. I could say name the bottom one, and I just keep pulling back along until I find some sphere that works, namely just the bottom sphere of this, and the multiplication maps are going to be just the A's all the way along. So it's a very easy recipe. All right. So I'm going to try the unthinkable. That is, in 3 minutes, do an entire spectral sequence. So I need a very, in the end, straightforward, but in the interest of time, undoable proposition. And that is that to take geometric fixed points is the same thing as inverting A sigma. Or if I prefer, I can invert any family representation that contains A sigma. So I can invert the regular representation, or the reduced regular representation. If you're interested, I can explain this to you. It's very straightforward. But this is unbelievably destructive. If I look at the homology of a point, there's all kinds of stuff. Even for C2, Dan Isaacson showed us that the homology had that pretty wedge that the motivic homotopy theory sees, and then a complementary part that's all divided powers. Inverting A sigma destroys the divided powers part, makes the wedge part even prettier, easier to understand. And then if I'm doing a bigger group, there's even worse stuff. There's that divided powers part. There's stuff that's basically impossible to understand. Then there's extra generate all of these U's. Everything goes away. It's all destroyed by inverting A sigma. And in fact, A sigma inverse of HZ, if I compute the homotopy of this, and I can do either flavor, this looks like Z mod 2, because I've also killed 2 then. I have any of the A's that show up, and they're all inverted. And then I have a single class, which I'll call W, that corresponds to U2 sigma, the orientable one, over A sigma squared. That's it. That's a very simple algebra. So now I'm going to piece everything together. I've said that all we have to understand, if I'm going to understand the geometric fixed points, is this algebra of monomials. The homotopy groups of HZ, once I've inverted A sigma, are these. So when I piece this together, I get that the homotopy groups of the sliced E2 term are Z mod 2, adjoin all the A's to the plus or minus 1, adjoin all of these norm classes, and then finally adjoin W. All I've done is that I just remember that these are indexing my sum ends, and that I'm suspending by these. So these are the representation ring graded functors. This is a slightly messy name. So instead, I'm going to say set all the A's equal to 1, because they're units, so I might as well. And then instead of the norm of Ri, I'm going to call this Xi, which I can push into a z-graded stem, and then the z-graded stems look like this for the E2 term. Z mod 2, I join X1, and so on. For all integers, I join a class W. This is the E2 term of a spectral sequence that converges to the homotopy groups of MO. What are the homotopy groups of MO? Well, it's also polynomial. Except I don't have generators in every degree. I have generators in every degree that's not a power 1 less than a power of 2. So I have my differentials on the class that shouldn't be there, W, and the powers of W systematically wipe out the X's that are in degrees 1 less than a power of 2. And if I were to draw the picture, which you can do, it's not hard, you even see just from degree considerations, that's the only thing that can happen. So I learned that D whatever of W to the 2 to the I, it's something like X 2 to the I minus 1. There we go. So what have I done? And I'll end with this. I've computed a few differentials in the slice spectral sequence. And I've tied my differentials to classes that we understand. These x2 to the I minus 1s, these are really just names for these guys. So if I inverted some of these, I would produce new permanent cycles. Namely, these were the only possible differentials that could have shown up. And when these are inverted as well, I learn that certain elements of these, if I invert these guys, become nilpotent. That's everything. Once I know that some of the A's, in particular, once I know that A sigma is nilpotent, then I learn things like the fixed points and homotopy fixed points are going to agree. Once I learn that A sigma is that A sigma is nilpotent, or that one of these is inverted, then I learn that these guys survive, and I can build out of these guys my periodicity class. These are the orientations. These are the ones that say I have a representation sphere that carries those classes that I like. I want to turn that representation sphere into an ordinary sphere, so I need an orientation for my MU theory to do that. The survival of these classes is exactly the existence of an orientation for those representations. So knowing this, and I really am not trying to flim-flam you or say anything that's not the extent of what we do. These are the only differentials you need to understand. Nothing else. And you get all of the rest of the result. So thank you for letting me go a few minutes over, and I'll stop.